All right, everyone, I think we will go ahead and get started. Good afternoon and welcome to ERA's April Teleforum. Our facilitator today, as always, is Nikki Weiss of SalesWise in Toronto. She is ERA's sales consultant and columnist in The Representer. She is a professional sales and leadership coach and trainer who has worked with thousands of reps, manufacturers, and distributors in our industry. We are delighted to have three co-facilitators today, and I'm going to have each one of them introduce themselves. Julie, I'm going to have you go first.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Julie Fajardo with TDK Lambda, a manufacturer, and I manage the distribution channel for our team.
Great. Thank you so much. Dave, would you like to go next?
Yeah. Hello, everyone. This is Dave Winter with South Atlantic Component Sales out of Charlotte, and our rep firm goes from the Mid-Atlantic to the Southeast.
Thank you, Dave. And we are supposed to be having Bob Purcell joining us. Bob, just shoot me an email if you are here, if you've dialed in the different way. So, Nikki, I will go ahead and turn it over to you in one moment. If anybody has any questions, you can email those to me. It is S-T-I-E-R-N-E-Y at ERA.org, S-Tierney at ERA.org. We encourage lots of questions and comments at all times. So don't be shy to send those my way, and we will stop intermittently for your feedback as well. So, Nikki, please proceed.
Great. So we're going to be talking about how to manage conflict. And I would ask everybody to give yourself permission to be a learner for the next hour. Turn away from distractions. Take lots of notes because our presenters are unbelievable. And even just close your eyes and just listen. If you're not driving, we'd like you to be truly present on this call, and as soon as you think of a question or as soon as you think of a comment, shoot Steph an email. We'd like to include your interaction in this conversation. So managing conflict is there's no end to conflict. When we were preparing for this call, I heard stories that I thought, wow, this is really hard. So I can see why there's a lot of people on the call. So we're going to share stories, and we're going to start with Dave. Dave, what kind of messes do reps find themselves in? If you could tell a story of what you experienced, that would be great.
Sure. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Certainly not have all the answers here, but just share, as said, share a few stories. But one that comes to mind from our discussions yesterday is really around design registrations and timing and open communication. I had a recent example this week, actually, of a customer that submitted, two quotes to a distributor. And distributor one came in and asked for design registration. They actually are supporting that customer with a similar product. And so it looked like pretty legit to me. So a few calls and follow-up, but I knew from about a year ago another distributor actually designed the part in to a different program, and a few hours later I got the design reg from the first distributor from a few years ago. And so just trying to manage the conflict, who did what and when, have open conversations around that, and trying to do the right thing and for our manufacturers and for the folks that are doing the work. And so it's, as we all know, a little touchy from time to time, but to have that dialogue with each of the folks and explain who did what and when is key. Because all the while, the customer always wants to, avoid managing the pricing and things of that sort. So trying to make sure you honor the work and support the folks that are doing the work, while keeping the customer happy, who always wants to pit people, either manufacturers against each other or distributors against each other, to get the lowest price. So that was recent one that I had.
So yes. In the conflict that you described, it sounds like what is the conflict? Is it between the distributors? Is it between you and the distributors? Did the customer, stir the pot? Like, flesh out the conflict
the customer
a bit more.
The customer disturbs, stirred the pot because they wanted to get the best pricing, and pit one another. But it's really between the two distributors and, justifying who really did the work, because it was similar type of actions. The incumbent on one part did similar to the one that they're asking for now, and that work was done by a different distributor a year and a half ago. So trying to explain to one distributor that, hey, the work was already done. You happen to be an active, supplier there, but not on this part. But, they didn't quite see it that way. So just trying to make sure that you have open dialogue and explain and have your facts straight, mm-hmm. Because you might be supporting them at a different account and even a different manufacturer at the same account in the coming weeks or coming months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we'll get into, for everybody listening, we're going to get into some strategies to manage the conflicts you find yourself in, but let's just get a sense of the conflicts you find yourselves in. So, Julia, you're part of a manufacturer. What
Correct.
Kind of messes do you find?
Well, and to Dave's point, a lot of it, our conflict comes from the customer. The customers cause the conflict between the distributors. And so probably in the last month, one of the major ones that I had was for our product being designed in, it could take anywhere from 2 to 5 years. It's a long cycle. So when we had a distributor that brought the opportunity, we worked with them, it got designed in, it was probably about 3 to 6 months to go into production, so they started placing the orders. Well, right when the customer started placing the orders, the buyer left, and a new buyer came in. And the new buyer says, well, I like distributor, B, and so I want to work with them, and then tries to convince us that, they've been doing the work, and they have other opportunities with them, and they go on and on and on. And so for us, for TDK Lambda, what we do is we really stand behind the distributor that brought us the opportunity and works with it and designs it. Because if you don't stand behind your programs and your processes, then it defeats the purpose of having them. So it's easier said than done, saying, okay, no, we're not going to allow this. We have to work with the customer. We have to go back to the engineer. And, again, we try to avoid involving the customer as much as possible because we think even though they've caused it, we want to make it easy on them. But in this case, we did have to involve the customer and go back and explain exactly what went on. And they don't really care about our processes. This is who they want to work with. They're better friends with them. Mm-hmm. At the end, we were able to do it, but it was a very tight rope that we walked because we didn't want to upset the customer. But again, when you just have a person change in an organization, that doesn't mean that, the company's just going to change because you said so. It sounds kind of negative, but we really, again, I go back to, we really support and back up the distributor that brought us the opportunity to the point where we've even lost some opportunities, which I know is probably hard to believe, but we have. Because, again, if we don't back up our programs, then there's no reason to have them. It defeats the purpose. So the type of conflicts we typically have with distribution is, again, the customer dictating that they want to switch, or a distributor, come in saying that they did the work and they didn't. And we have a lot of distributors that go into our direct accounts, which we're about 50-50, and say, okay, we help design this in and that type of thing. So there's, when you talk about conflict in our industry, it's daily. And I'm sure every one of you mm-hmm. that are on the phone can relate to that. And we just got to all, stand behind our programs, our processes, and support those folks that really help drive it in without,
right.
Trying to burn any relationships. Yeah.
You just mentioned burning relationships. Let's talk about some of the consequences of these conflicts or the impacts of these conflicts. Julie, from the manufacturer's point of view, what are some of the consequences?
There are some really unfortunate consequences for us as a manufacturer because, with our distribution partners, I manage it at a corporate level. So normally what I try to do, when the conflict's at the local level, if what I try to do is be good cop, bad cop, and I'm normally the bad cop because I want our reps and our regional managers to keep face at the branch level, because if that relationship is burned at the branch level, then most likely that branch is not going to be calling on us anymore or wanting to sell our line. And we understand that. So, you know, and again, it's depending on the situation, but typically when I get involved, I'll work it with the corporate, and then I'll actually work it with the branch and the regional. And again, I hate to do it all the time, but it is. I really have to be the bad guy, the bad cop, to save face. And I think from a manufacturer perspective, we need to do that because we don't want to burn any relationships. However, you know, we do have to be ethical. We have to stand behind our programs, and we do want to be trusted. You want to be a trusted advisor to this branch, but we don't want to burn that relationship by not always adhering to what they need or what they want. Mm-hmm. That's typically what, I mean, that's a really bad one. You burn that relationship, you know, it can go on for months or years that they won't even touch your line. And in a branch, you know, they have, they can talk to everybody else. You know, those walls are very thin. So that's where we have mm-hmm. to be very careful.
And so a big consequence is burning relationships. And then people will stop talking about your products.
And selling the line, correct.
Yeah.
And that can be detrimental because not only they can, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No,
I was going to say they can actually take up, they could take it a step further, which it's happened, where the opportunities that they do have with us start trying to move them to a, you know, to a competitor. So it can get pretty ugly. You have to, again, like I said, to manufacture, we have to walk a pretty tight rope to be very careful because you really don't want to burn those, you know, burn those relationships at any level.
Yeah, you know what I would imagine too. I mean, you said people talk; the walls are thin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also a reputation that can get burned, not just relationships.
Correct.
When a conflict is not managed well.
Yes, and that reputation could be your entire organization or just you personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So the consequences are, you know, like one conflict is a window into a huge mess that could have fallout for years. Yeah. And Dave, I'm curious from the rep point of view, what are some of the consequences of these conflicts?
Could be many, but I think the point is you need to try to manage them all the same, and that's, you know, with good information, with respect, and hopefully minimize them or manage them to the best of your ability. So when they come up, and they come up frequently, that at least, you know, our reputation, my reputation, you know, the companies that we represent, you know, we're not going to, we're going to be consistent, you know. And so they do come up with issues, though, and consequences. You know, for us, we could, you know, a big one be even lose a line if you get a reputation, you know, falsely on some scenarios that happen and a distributor or customer or manufacturer has this view of your firm. And, you know, we have a small geography and a small part of a much larger ecosystem. So that and also, you know, manufacturers will often, you know, go to distribution, senior management, regional management, and hey, what firms do you like? Who do you work well with in your geography? And, you know, we certainly hope our name and our ethical view of how we run our business, you know, is accurate in some of these scenarios. You manage them well so that they could have an impact on, you know, securing a new line or things of that sort that, you know, we're viewed mm-hmm. as easy to work with and manage consistently.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not always the case. Hopefully that's always the case, but not always.
Right. So you could lose a line, securing a new line, people talk, oh, that Dave, he did not do right by us, you know, whether you did or you didn't. Let's pause for a sec. You both have framed the problems quite well. Steph, do we have any questions yet?
Yes. This one is actually geared for Julie. How do you decide when to add another distributor to your franchise roster, knowing they have competing lines on their card?
For us, I've been more on less distributors, more focus. So we we shortened our list probably in the last 5 to 10 years and haven't changed that. So for me, I just go back to it's less distributors, more focus. And even the distributors we have now, they have almost every competing line that we compete with, where if I go back 5 to 7 years ago, where there were some quote-unquote safe houses, there's not that anymore. We could probably go with some niche, but I'd really try not to disrupt the apple cart, because if I go and sign, you know, there are a few distributors that we could still go sign, but my thought process is if we go sign them, what is that going to do? Is that just going to move our business, you know, from one distributor to the other, you know, maybe based on loyalty or they like that distributor better? I just don't see. I know some manufacturers have 15, 20, 30 distributors. We have 7. So I think even in our product category, we're probably the lowest as far as distribution. But again, I go back to less distributors, more focus. It allows me to focus more. And again, with these type of conflicts, I can do it down at the branch level with the team. If you have 30 distributors, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. So that's a tough one because we've thought about that before, but I don't think adding more distributors adds more sales. I mean, obviously it would add some. I think a lot of it would move around, but the actual organic sales, I think the current distributors we have can do that for us. As long as we keep those strong relationships and keep the pipeline going, it's been pretty good for us. So I don't advocate adding just to add.
Yeah, right. Bigger is not necessarily better. More is not necessarily an effective way of doing business.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's pause for a sec. Steph, we want to hear your email address again. So those of you thinking, send us a question or a comment right away. What's your email?
Sure. It's Stephanie. I'm sorry, my phone was going in and out there. It's stierney@era.org. So stierney@era.org. Thank you.
Okay, great. So, Julie, I know that you have been very intentional and thoughtful about creating processes and best practices for preventing a mess and then from dealing with a mess. What kinds of processes can you share with the group that would help them put their own processes in place?
Well, one of them I can share is that it's transferring, we actually have an ISO procedure that I wrote. It's transferring distribution business to direct. And again, this is all based around a customer coming back and either saying, you know, they want a better price or they're not getting the support for the from the distributor, whatever the case may be. So what I did was write a procedure that if, in fact, the distributor that's currently supporting that did bring it to us and did the demand creation, then we have a process written that we go to that distributor, we explain to them what is going on, what the customer has stated, and depending on the situation, they're all different, we give that distributor roughly 2 to 4 weeks to go and rectify that situation with our support. We will go in there with them, we support it, because again, we stand behind our registration program and you know, design in. So if for whatever reason they cannot get this done, and again, it depends on the situation. So let's just say it's a cost issue. You know, the customer is going out there and they're trying to get better pricing. In those cases, the distributor really can't help that much. We'll look at our margin, see if we can help. If we can, great, we'll give the distributor a better price. Although that can work against you, because then the customer thinks, oh, you've given them a lower price, they're still making a margin. Now I want, you know, an even lower price, and I still want to go direct. And those do come up. And again, we have a whole process of what we do and working with it. And typically, when it comes down to the very end and the customer is just adamant about this is what I want to do and this is the reasons, it doesn't happen all the time, but typically what we try to do is we try to work like another account. Maybe we have it direct. Maybe it's a new opportunity, that type of thing. And we try to work it and share it with that distributor, basically give it to them because of what's gone on. In some cases, it's only happened twice since I've been in this role, but we've actually paid the distributor a percentage of that business until for the first 2 years. So, again, it goes back to us standing behind our program. Not everyone can do that, and I mean, you've got to look at margins, but even if you're giving somebody 2 or 3%, you're not burning that gap, even though the customer is created. If the distributor's done nothing except support it, you know, keep the inventory, do everything they ask, you know, designed in, again, it's taken them 3 years, and then just to say, okay, we're taking it away, I mean, you burn the bridges basically from, you know, that salesperson all the way up probably to the president of the company, of the distributor, because you lost that. So, again, we have a process, and we have paid for a couple years while it was in production. In some cases, we'll try to, you know, take another customer and give that to them, kind of like a swap, as, you know, a good nature, good suggestion, I mean. And again, it depends on the situation, but we will give the distributor, if they designed it in, we will always give them the benefit of the doubt and help and support them all the way until we cannot do it anymore to keep that business with that distributor.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and any processes for that the reps need to follow?
Yeah, the reps are in this whole process, the reps are right in with it. You know, typically when this happens, the rep hears about it first. The rep typically hears about it before the manufacturer or the distributor for the most part, you know, because the reps in there, they have the relationship. So absolutely, they're involved. They're involved through the whole cycle. They're a key integral part of this process because they have the relationship not only with the customer but also with the distributor at the local level. And again, as a manufacturer, we have to make sure that we're also protecting our rep. We don't want them to get a bad rep because, you know, the customer wants to do this or the distributor didn't do that. So for me, it's really, like I said the other day, I'm that type. I want all the facts. I want to, you know, from our rep and the distributor, I want to understand exactly what took place and why this is happening or what their thoughts are. And again, try not to involve the customer unless we have to, and try to resolve it. And, yeah, rep is key in this because they're an extension of our sales channel.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, they're involved.
Thanks. So let's pause for another sec. There's been a lot of good info here. Steph, do we have any more emails?
Yes, and Dave, this one is directed to you, actually. It says, how do you, as a rep, handle conflict in front of the customer?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have conflict with my customers. All joking aside, I think just trying to hear them out. You know, what are their issues? You know, and to put all facts on the table. Because if there's conflict or issues, I find if you listen and try to understand what they are really looking for, to Julie's point, if it's, you know, shorter lead time or better pricing or different terms, you know, with open communication and getting the facts on the table, often at least we know what we have to work on. And if we solve it, then, you know, the goal is to have a long-term customer and a happy customer and actually, you know, grow the business. So to me, you know, having the open dialogue to get to the root cause of what's driving the, you know, the conflict.
And I would imagine, Dave, that sometimes people are not so reasonable. They're mad at you.
Yeah, that,
they want
that
to play you. They want to play you one against another to get their way. Those are really challenging human relationship interactions. What I'm hearing you say, you know, underneath what you're saying is you stay calm.
Some people who know me think that maybe I don't always stay calm. At least in front of the customer, you got to keep your eye on the prize. And you know, customers and manufacturers, in our view, are also our customers. So try to understand what our needs are, and what our manufacturers' needs are, and certainly how to best fulfill that, to the, you know, with and for the customer. But Julie, having somebody like you in our corner, a lot of times we find that most of our selling, or oftentimes, is back to our manufacturers to articulate the real scenario in the field and the market dynamics, and why we need, or why the customer's asking what the customer's asking for. And so, you know, trying to make sure everyone's on the same page, and keep some of the emotion out of it, and a longer view.
And so, Dave, I just want to point to something you just said, to clarify and also to help people think about this. When you are hearing out a customer, when you are aware that something's going on, do you have a one-on-one conversation with the customer, or is it a triadic conversation with you, the manufacturer, and the customer, typically?
It kind of varies. It depends on the manufacturer, and you said you keep some of the emotions out of it, and sometimes it just would be one-on-one because, you know, they're going to come in and they have their ideas of all the things that they've done for them and why are they upset anyway, and they, you know, kind of come loaded. And so it really depends on the personalities at the manufacturer, mm-hmm. and at the customer. But I prefer to have an inclusive scenario, so there's really nowhere to hide and nowhere to misconstrue conversations. So full transparency and get all parties involved or on the same email thread or whatever, and say, hey, here's what we're trying to do, versus these one-off dialogue or email threads.
Mm-hmm. I want to underscore what you just said. It doesn't always work that way. And, you know, our company helps everybody work to the best of their capacity. And one of the most powerful perspectives and behaviors that I see people taking is triading. When you get three people in the conversation, not one-on-one. So this can have, you know, implications for all kinds of things, but when you're trying to resolve conflict or handle conflict, what you said is, I prefer inclusive conversations. I want to get everyone aligned. So I would urge everybody to take that approach. If you can ask the customer, or just decide yourself, who else needs to be in the conversation? Because it's scary going in by yourself, and it's usually a more effective outcome, and you probably already know this, of including somebody else. But I'd like for everybody to think about how to make that a more intentional practice, triading, whether you include the distributor or somebody else on the customer side or somebody else from your rep firm or somebody else from the manufacturer, but not going in alone. And working it out behind the scenes. Yeah. Bob, I understand that you are on the line. Is that true?
Oh. He just emailed me. Let me make sure he called in the right way. I'll email him back.
Thank you, Steph.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Nikki, if I could just add one thing to what you just said, to Dave's point about, you know, having these exclusive conversations, I think another really good practice is to, when you have these type of conflicts that get pretty in-depth, I 100% agree with Dave, you have to keep the emotion out of it. But I think more importantly, too, is stay away from the email. Because I'm sure you're all aware of, when you have these conflicts, these emails can end up being like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pages, and then it gets misconstrued on what exactly you're trying to say, and, you know, what you meant is not how it was, you know, came across on the email. And then as the email goes through, someone might add somebody else, and you haven't paid attention. I think in these type of situations, absolutely, Dave, get on the phone or go in person. Stay away from email. Everyone tries to hide behind email. I think it's a big no-no.
You know, thank you for bringing that up. We all know that, and yet we slip into bad habits. And then
Yes. The
tone is off, our wording is off, what we thought we were trying to say didn't get conveyed properly. And, you know, people love stories. And in the absence of good facts and information, people make up stories. And the stories they make up are often worse. They're catastrophes about intent, you know, this, that. And it's hard to walk people back from this story that they've made up. So that
Correct.
If you can be proactive, you know, and get people on the phone or in person, you can avoid a mess. So, right, I think that's a great comment about email can cause part of the mess.
Correct.
or put fuel on the fire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, Julie, we're talking about processes in dealing with conflict. Dave, I'm wondering if you have best practices in preventing messes from happening in the first place.
Again, doing some of the things we were talking about already, and that's making sure you have your facts and you do document that. But to your point, if you have some challenging scenarios, it is often better to have a dialogue or get the vested parties together, because it's a lot harder to take those stances in person that you might take an email or over the phone. So for us, it's better to bring the people together sooner rather than later and have your facts straight with an end goal in mind and mapped out. And to Julie's point,
like,
you know, some of the companies we represent, they for them to have their policies and procedures and to follow those and to know who to go to get the answers to avoid some of these challenges in the first place.
Well, so let me ask you something. How would you design this kind of way of operating with a customer? Do you say to the customer, I know that price is important, and so how do we, you know, here we have brought you a design, we're, you know, in the final stages of the conversation, we've put a ton of work into it, and then you're going to shop for price. How do you have those conversations to avoid a mess proactively?
I think as professional salespeople, we should be trying to articulate, you know, what's good for your customer and all the things that you've done, because you've heard what they've asked for, and you've asked and tried to understand what they are asking for and what their customer's asking for. So it's less about price and more about value, but dealing with a lot of the buyers and customers across the board, they, you know, we just had a conversation this morning with an investment guy and talked about Honeywell and other customers and major corporations. At the end of the day, they just care about price and profit, and they're going to make the decisions they're going to make. So, yeah, I don't think all we can do is articulate our value as we understand for what they're asking for and make sure we, you know, highlight that in terms they'll understand.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do when you are with a manufacturer on a joint sales call with a customer and the customer wants to talk about a different manufacturer? I'm sure that would cause some conflict.
Yeah, I think we, from our earlier discussions, I think, you know, maybe a buddy call that, you know, myself and another distributor might be on, and then the customer, you know, asks the distributor for a quote on the company we sell for, but also, you know, the three that they sell for as well or distribute for as well. Then, you know, on our side, when you make buddy calls, you recognize that that can happen, probably will happen, but if you have the history and obviously you're in there together and you want to work on that opportunity with one manufacturer and some other things on your line card, you have the dialogue on the front end of it and say, hey, if they're asking for TDK and somebody else, we recognize that you have to quote them, but hopefully, you know, we're working more closely together and understand that, you know, that we'll win because we've got a better solution and more transparency on our pricing and what the customer needs, and give them another price, but give us last look because we worked with you on the front end and brought you in. So remember, you know, we're in this for the long haul, and again, do the right thing with the relationships that you have to keep those in the forefront.
Mhm. Mhm. Thanks. And Julie, how would you, you know, say that you're in this situation where you are on a buddy call with Dave, you know, talking about TDK, and the customer brings up somebody else? How would you want to have, one thing I'm thinking of is that you and Dave would have had to have had a conversation before you walked into the customer about how to handle that if that scenario comes up. What do you do now?
You know,
what do you suggest?
I think that that's a tough one because, I mean, that's probably only happened maybe once or twice in my lifetime. It happens with changing distributors, but not so much with a competitor. Although it has, you know, they may bring up, typically what happens when we're in there, they may say, well, competitor A, you know, has this option or, you know, this efficiencies are better, can you meet this or that type of thing. That's typically the type of conversation that we'll get into. And then obviously we try to, you know, hopefully we have the product that will fit what they're looking for. However, at the end of the day, you just have to stay very professional. As Dave said, keep the emotion out of it, because a lot of emotion can come in with something like that. But that one's a tough one from a manufacturer, because typically I think I've only really seen that once. I mean, Dave, maybe you've seen it more than I have, where they'll actually ask for another manufacturer while we're sitting there. They may refer to one, but I've never seen them actually ask for one as a manufacturer sitting there. They might to the distributor
so
after we walk away.
Well, or I think maybe, Nikki, to your point for Julie, it's if they'll ask for another distributor to, you know, can you quote it to Julie through another distributor? Julie, you in an awkward position. You went in with, you know, distributor A, and the customer in front
right.
of distributor A and you said, hey, can you, you know, can you have somebody else quote it as well? Because we, you know, we work, you know, really well with this other distributor, so that puts Julie in a, or the manufacturer's rep in an odd spot, because the distributor is on the call with them, and, you know, so, again, I think, yeah, you have to walk a fine line there and make sure you support the people who are supporting you.
Correct.
Yeah. And, Bob, I'm wondering if you're on the line now.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Now we can
yes.
hear
oh,
you.
Yes. Oh, sorry. My apologies. I've been listening intently, and you've had some great ideas and comments. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm
and
sure
Bob,
you have thoughts.
Just to let everybody know, he is the owner of Brevin Electronics.
A distributor.
Yes.
So, Bob, as you're listening to this conversation, what kind of messes do you find yourself in, or others in your company?
When there's
conflict.
A dispute or conflict, it's so interesting, because threaded throughout all these conversations has been the importance of relationships. And I think everyone on the phone may agree that developing strong relationships is more difficult than it had been in the past, and the reasons of social media and all accompanying similarities. But when we have a problem, in today's point, we seldom have a problem, but when we do have that problem, we've found the best thing to do, and we're at a bit of an advantage here in New England, we can be at any customer within 2 hours. It's been our experience that if we can get right in front of the customer, even perhaps before, just to acknowledge the problem in a personal manner, it does seem to mitigate at some level if there is to be an emotion involved. It's just perhaps human nature once you get there and demonstrate your concern. And then immediately getting information, and that's where communications becomes imperative. Someone mentioned earlier about the inefficiency of emails and all of that, and we would all agree with that. We've all lived through sitting in an office when someone comes in and says, I just spoke with Frank, and they're really upset, and he said this and whatever. And you may say, well, did you actually speak to Frank? And the answer is often no, but his email. And what we're finding is people are interpreting emails with emotion, and that gets very confusing. So when there is some sort of dispute, I think the importance is to immediacy is key. And as we all know, the toughest information to forward is bad information, but that's the most important information. And I think that's how distributors like Brevin and others are evaluated by the customer. How do they handle the when things go bad? How do they handle it? And someone had mentioned earlier about, and I apologize, I'm hopping around just a bit, but in terms of placing new distribution into the marketplace, and I agree with your speaker there from TDK, it isn't quantity, it's quality. But I'll raise a flag for the regional distributor, because there are those of us around the country. And I think the key is these are people that focus on the second and third tier customers with a reduced line card in many cases. So I recall not too long ago when a manufacturer said to me personally, Bob, I know if you have a problem with X, with my company, you'll solve it with my company. So I think that's important, and it strengthens the role of the regional distributor at a level. So I think there remains a place, and I think the word niche was used. And I think the key with the smaller distributor is that we're really focused on pipeline support. We may not have a million customers, but the customers that the smaller distributors have, they can provide, if they have the financial capability, you really can provide a pipeline support there. But conflicts is something you just can't avoid, and it's too easy to do that. And I think it's really a team sport. You have to immediately respond, get the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. We love to bring the reps in to meet with our manufacturer, into our customers. And that, at the very least, it shows that there is a team here, that if there's a problem with Brevin, I've just brought the AMP local rep in with me. And that provides, in the customer's mind, that, boy, Brevin has the support of the manufacturer. So it's really a team. And I am talking a bit, too. Yeah. I didn't have a chance, but I do think, from a rep perspective, that those organizations have changed. And I certainly understand why. In years past, it was, in many, many cases, a distributor sales manager at the rep level. And that position has been reduced significantly, at least in our estimation. And that was always a good, that was a point person to really develop relationships. And that's changing, but we all have to change with the changing times. So I hope I gave you a little bit of insight into how we're looking at this issue.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been so helpful to hear of the three different perspectives. Let's pause for another minute. Steph, any more questions yet?
Yes, I do have a question. It says, do you have a formal buddy call program, and do you track it?
And that would be for who, Dave?
I think Bob and Dave.
Dave, do you want to take that one, or would you like me to?
I'll have a few comments. We don't have a formal buddy call process, like we have to have so many or that type of thing. But we certainly embrace our distributor outside sales people and account. I'm not sure who that is with the noise, but somebody. Is not muted, but anyway, so we don't track it per se, other than our NBO opportunities, and we would, you know, those are assigned to whatever distributor we're working with, and then we report that up to our manufacturers, and if they have any specific buddy call requirements, then we would support that and track and report on that as, you know, as requested.
Mm-hmm. And what is how you think about buddy calls, Dave? Your approach. Like, are you somebody who is always advocating to have buddy calls, or do you prefer non-buddy calls, or something in between? How do you approach it yourself?
I think it depends on some of the manufacturers that we have, and also some of the account assignments that our account managers have, but we, you know, do a fair amount of our own sales calls and manage that accordingly, but certainly support, you know, buddy calls and distribution and their activities and their relationships. I view it that we have very strong relationships at some accounts and can assist distributor partners of ours, and likewise some of our accounts, our distributor partners have a lead role, and so we'll kind of leverage our position or their position, you know, as needed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. And Bob?
Yes. Well, like David, we don't have a formal program. However, the sales managers will work with the sales team and with the manufacturer's rep, et cetera, and on a quarterly basis develop target accounts, which would evolve into buddy calls. And we've always had a philosophy here that there's no such thing as a bad buddy call, if you will, if you prepare it correctly. And I think that's the key. When you're making a visit with either a manufacturer's direct salesperson or a manufacturer's rep, you have a reason for going. And at the very least, and it remains important, is we don't do it enough, quite frankly. We all seem to think we're much too busy to do it, and we're guilty of that as well. But it strengthens that, as David said, it strengthens the relationship between you and that person, and it has to be underscored by trust. And it also strengthens the distributor's position with that manufacturer in front of the customer. So now the customer knows, whether it's subliminal or not, that if I have a problem with X manufacturer, I know Brevin has a relationship with that manufacturer. So those are the two things that happen every time. We just feel that when either a manufacturer or a rep visits, it's important, because we're also down busy, to find out what's the agenda, what are we trying to accomplish. And as I said, at the very least, you're strengthening a very important relationship. And I hope that answers your question.
Mm-hmm. And I think there can be conflict in buddy calls.
Yes.
You know, one person starts talking and the other person wants to show how smart they are, so they talk over the other person. I mean, I've seen all kinds of nonsense go on in buddy calls, so that it can cause conflict. You know, one person says one thing and the other person contradicts them. You know, it's
exactly.
Like endless what goes on. So
we suffer from the human condition, really, and those are things that can happen. If you develop ground rules, but again, you hit it right on the
there
head.
There you go.
Yeah, you really did. But if you can develop those ground rules before you walk in. But we've all been around for quite a while. Things do happen, but nothing so severe. Although we've had some interesting, I'm sure David's had the same, people start talking about conflicting lines or whatever. But you can mitigate that by saying, look, we have conflicts on our line cards. Let's not talk about them while we're in this meeting. And again, it's based on trust and all. And this is something I don't even want to tell you how long I've been in the business, probably as long as Walter Tobin. But these are the kind of conflicts that we are always dealing with. But it does start and begin and end with trust and preparation, I think.
Yeah. Wonderful. Let's pause again. Steph, any more questions?
Yes, I do. It says, how do you manage minor conflicts inside a rep? And I think this is geared towards Julie.
How do you manage conflict within the rep?
Correct.
I would need
a minor conflict.
A minor
conflict.
I think Julie
wants to ask if they have TDK and somebody else is bringing on, you know, a limited power supply offering, or if you acquire somebody, or there becomes a conflict at the rep with an overlapping, over-synergistic product set.
Yeah, because see, for us, with our reps, right, I mean, any rep that we sign, you know, we're the only power line. If there's not a competing line on their line card for power when we have our reps. So a conflict with a rep, as a manufacturer with the rep, there's not too, I mean, the only conflict maybe you might have is where there's a problem at the local branch and, you know, the rep is pushing something that they shouldn't be pushing, and our regional manager has, you know, knows that that's really not the case because they're good buddies. We go back to that relationship. There might be little conflicts like that, but they're typically handled with our regional managers. And I can't really think off the top of my head, to be real honest, we really stand behind the rep organizations, and we have pretty good relationships. We rarely change them. So we don't, I'm not going to say there's never any conflict, but it's so minimal, I don't even know if I can really give you a good example, unfortunately. And again, because we don't have competing lines on their line card. They're only, you know, if they're selling power, it's only TDK Lambda. It's not anybody else.
Right.
I hope that answers.
If it doesn't, whoever wrote the question, please send Steph a follow-up question. That would be great.
Absolutely.
One thing that I wonder, too, is that there is always this inherent tension, I'm imagining, between wanting to book the order for the rep and for everybody, and you're in a middle of a mess, whatever. I mean, you guys have described a lot of them. When do you decide to book the order over considering the long-term implications of how this will affect your relationship?
Well, I mean, from a manufacturer perspective, you know, the order is typically coming to us either from the customer or the distributor. When there's a conflict, say the customer's placed the order with the distributor and there's something going on, you know, the customers or the distributor still wants better pricing from us, you know, because their margin isn't good enough, or they don't want to hold the inventory. We all know that sometimes with distribution. They don't want to hold the inventory, so they only place a partial of the order. Typically with those type of cases, I normally have to get involved and I'll call the corporate and kind of figure out exactly what's going on, what we need to do to get the order placed with us so we can give on order with the factory. But typically in those cases, it's really, I believe, a lot of it's held up at the corporate level for whatever criteria they have or, you know, reasonings of why they don't want to place the entire order. You know, again, it could be inventory, it could be margin, it could be multiple things. And depending on what that situation is, I think at the local level, and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, in these cases, most of the time it's stopped at corporate, not at the local level. Because the local guy, they want to get it booked. Hey, we worked on this. Mm-hmm. You know, we got the order from the customer, placed the order with the factory because we want to get it, you know, we want to get it booked and we want to get it shipped so we can get paid. So, again, I think that really happens at the corporate. And we have those from time to time, but then again, it's just working it out. And fortunately for me, I have pretty strong relationships with all of our distributors at a corporate level. So it's pretty easy for me to pick up the phone and find out, you know, what's going on and being able to work through it. But to Bob's point, it really comes down to the relationships I've built over the last almost 20 years of being in this position. It doesn't happen overnight, but it doesn't make it a lot easier. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think
yes, it is.
Bridges get burned quickly. And in the speed of today and wanting to make the sale, I'm sure unintended consequences happen of burning bridges all over the place. How can you plan for that, or what do you end up saying no to so that you don't burn relationships?
Again, you know, it really varies on the situation. In some cases, you have to, you know, it's really, this is what went on, this is our program, and I have to stand behind it. And if we were, you know, if the situation was reversed, you'd want me to be supporting you also. That's typically my go-around because, push comes to shove. I really need to support the guys. I want to keep my relationships, but I got to support those folks that are doing it. And like I said, if you reverse that and say, okay, put yourself in their shoes, would you want me to be doing this to you? My best guess is the answer is no. And so typically, like I said, it really in a lot of these cases, especially at a corporate level, it really does come down to the relationships and making sure we understand each other and we understand each other's programs. And it takes a long time to build these relationships and have them solid, but, you know, it takes a minute to burn it, to your point, Nikki. I mean, once you burn it, it's hard to get it back. So it's really just making sure that you know one another, you know your programs, and they pretty much know where you stand and where you're going to hold your ground. And you can't, you know, you can't be a pushover all the time. Those that know me, I'm not a pushover. You know, you have to hold your ground and stand behind your organization, your programs, your reps, and your distributors that brought you the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dewey. Anybody else want to respond to mm-hmm. that? Like looking at order over burning a relationship?
Well, it's interesting because I think you're correct, Nikki. You know, taking it off the street is a theme often heard in sales offices around the distribution world. And oftentimes, there'll be a lead time involved, and the customer needs the parts in 5 weeks. You know the lead time is 11 weeks. And the danger, but the temptation, is to say, look, give me that order, and I'll fight for you. So those fighting words are quickly forgotten at the customer level because they've said, okay, here's the order. It's off my desk. Now it's your problem. And that's where, and then, of course, now it's your problem. And then you try to make it the manufacturer's problem. And that's what we have to be careful of. And it's very hot. It's very competitive out there. And, and I think Deb said, if you lose an order, it's tough to get it back. So there is a temptation which does inherently create conflict. We're fortunate. And if you're dealing with manufacturers that you have strong relationships, they're often the ones giving you the go. Get the order. We'll fight for you. But that's a conflict that's not uncommon and can get you in trouble, and hopefully it does not. So I kind of just place that as a possibility as well, relative to which is just the nature of our business.
Mm-hmm. And so it's about fairness in an unfair situation. It's about integrity when integrity is hard. It's not all that clear, maybe,
right,
what is right and what is wrong.
Right.
And yet what I'm hearing is the mindset is that somehow everybody in this conflict needs to win. Somehow.
Exactly.
Well, and they may not win
sometimes
the order.
Sometimes you don't.
Or they may,
right.
Right. But it's the, you win because you get a chance on future orders. You may
right.
not win this particular order, but you haven't done damage. Right? It sounds like it's like a lot of damage control is trying to figure out how to play fairly in a sandbox that's where not everybody's playing fairly, and that it's your role. That's what I'm hearing for all of you. It's your role to facilitate fairness.
Right. Exactly. You're trying to measure the risk and make the best
yeah.
decisions. And decision making, as we all know, is making the right decision with not all the facts. And
right.
it's underscored by experience, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't have a lot of experience, it's underscored by courage, by being willing to be in that vulnerable place of, ooh, I don't know how this is going to turn out, but I will enter in that conversation because what's happening now isn't working. It's somehow sitting on my soul that it's not fair or something. So we
That's
have
an excellent
like
point.
A minute.
That's
to...
an excellent point.
Yeah, it takes courage to do a lot of what you guys are talking about, which is really having showing up, you know, having these difficult face-to-face conversations or picking up the phone and smoothing things out and getting everybody who needs to be in the conversation, have conversations ahead of time to plan for a conflict and what you will do to minimize it or mitigate it or avoid it. And once you're in a conflict, again, showing up. That's what I'm hearing a lot is you show up. You keep showing up. You keep showing up. And you fight for what's right for everybody. Even though in this moment it may not be the best scenario for you, but overall it's about strengthening and keeping and maintaining good relationships. I really thank all of you for sharing your stories, sharing your experience, sharing how to be consistent and a good person to do business with. You know, because in the end of the day, and I may say something that's totally weird, but it strikes me from this conversation that doing business is a spiritual act, that you do good by people, you do right by people no matter what. And so when you keep that in mind, whatever you do will fully work out somehow. Because we are called, our integrity is called into question all the time. And yeah, these little acts have big consequences. So thank you. A quick little promo for my own business, SalesWise and SalesWise Academy. Our business is about helping leaders and their teams create health and high functionality and become more skilled and collaborative with each other. And part of our program is how to do buddy calls well and how to increase your awareness of your impact on others as part of a sales professional, what you do. The program, it's a bite-sized 10-minute podcast with a worksheet that we send to our members, and then we ask them to, within their teams, include our lesson in your existing team meetings, whether they're weekly or every other week, and wrestle with things, work on things, get better at things, learn. These programs help create a culture of collaboration as well as more skills and or more skilled sales leaders and salespeople. And we have customers that have found much bigger opportunities because they are more skilled at getting the right people in the conversation and then having conversations in the way that customers appreciate. So if you're interested in investing in your team and want to learn more about the SalesWise Academy, please contact me. Stephanie, over to you.
Thank you, Nikki. Well, Bob, Julie, Dave, and you as well, Nikki, you all provided such great information on this topic, so thank you all so much. And as always, anyone who registered for the teleform will receive an email within the next few days from Nikki with the audio recording and a link that you can download and share with whomever you would like. Also, look for more details on the next teleform, which will be June 6th. Chapter leaders, mark your calendars. We have selected dates for the Chapter Officer Leadership Training Program. The in-person workshop will be November 6th and 7th, and more details will be coming out soon. The last thing here would be, if you are going to EDS, don't forget to stop by the ERA booth. Thank you so much, everyone, and have a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.